Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, with dogs barking in the background, you are looking live at Southside Sox, Soxivus Celebration. It is week two. It is the one you've perhaps marked on the calendar on January 1st, maybe, because you knew there were going to be grievances. If you had a feeling about this team the way many of us did, even the most optimistic and hopeful ones, it is the airing of grievances. We have five grievers, including myself here, but I'm going to kick it first to Father Soxivus himself so he can just give us a little bit of an overview of what you're about to hear, what we're writing about on site, what you'll hear on a podcast in a day or so. Give me a little background on this special week of Soxivus, Tommy Barbie.
I mean, this is the moment that you all have been waiting for, where we are letting loose with all of the stuff that we've all been, you know, complaining about since the beginning of the year on Slack and Twitter and everywhere else. Let it loose here. There's a lot to pick from. I know I had a hard time focusing on just one thing because there's a lot to choose from this year. But very excited to read what everybody else had to say about their respective grievances and hear a little bit about it today.
That's Father Soxivus. He has put this together for us now for the third year. The results of this season have gotten progressively worse. Sorry about the jinx, White Sox. Maybe you ought to give us some respect because year one, we were complaining about a playoff team and Tony La Russa and other stuff. Year two, just last year, a 500 team, which seems, boy, such a distant, pleasant.
I would take it now. Yeah.
Yes, we would. And this year, of course, well, you know, the grievances write themselves. Before we went live on, at least Twitter and YouTube, Facebook seems to be dragging and lingering and cranky, but hello, all of you out there in those two spots, at least. We were deciding it might be hard to even pick a grievance per month with a year like this. We're talking about a 101 loss team. We're talking about fake manager search, fake GM search, fake retention of manager at the very least. shooting in the ballpark. Jumping the market to sign an abuser. And those are just the ones right before we went live that I could just jot down here in my notes. There are plenty more. They're going to come up in the airing of grievances here on this very special day of Soxivus. I think I do need to kick it back to Father Soxivus to lead us off. He's the one who wrote first, and he's the one who's got some things to say. Give me a grievance, Tommy Barbie.
I had to start at the top. For anyone that has followed, most of my writing has been very focused on Rick Hahn, just because, yes, Jerry's a cheap bastard, but you can't tell me there isn't a way to build a roster that would be more successful than what they were. He got shown the door. Kenny Williams got shown the door. There was that 0.5 second sliver of optimism that we all shared as Sox fans before he's like, and Chris Getz, here we go. I don't know what Jerry Reinsdorf is doing, but he has really done a number on making sure that he alienates himself and the organization from the rest of the fan base in a way that I think can only be compared to Dollar Bill Wirtz with the Blackhawks. And for those of you that are too young to know anything about that, before Chelsea Dagger was a thing, there was a very, very talented Blackhawks roster that couldn't be watched on TV. you couldn't even really get tickets to games very easily. They traded players for no reason. Just lots of bad stuff. And that was all not even including just him being an overall cheap bastard. So when he died, all of the old heart and Blackhawks fans came out of the woodwork to be like, okay, we can actually be fans of this team again, because he actively traded away the most popular players because they were too popular. So now here we are, where you have all this fallout with Benetti, where there doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason other than Jerry Reinsdorf didn't think he was funny and Brooks Boyer didn't like that he was popular and all of that. You have all this weirdness with Nashville, which should be a non-story, but it's like Reinsdorf is trying to make it a story. So then we have to talk about it. And it's, that doesn't even include the fact that he promoted Chris Getz, who doesn't have a good track record. And if you want to dig deeper into his track record, it gets more problematic with the Omar Vizquel sexual harassment, with the just total lack of development from what was supposed to be one of the top prospect groupings in Major League Baseball. You have the shooting at the ballpark that's just been tucked away, hidden. Nobody's allowed to talk about it. Seemingly okay with, the starting pitcher number 5 that we won't necessarily name names, that randomly showed up. And it's like, all right, you're going to flip him at the trade deadline. Didn't do that. Okay, you're going to flip him at the non-tender date. Didn't do that either. And there was no purpose to doing that. And it's just a lot of really weird stuff. And interestingly, this is the most public he's been, where he's doing press conferences. He was at the winter meetings before meeting with the mayor of Nashville and talking to the press. And it's like, he's out enough to know that people don't like him, but he just doesn't seem to get it or care. And it's just been a very, very fascinating year, where I just think he is actively tanking his organization and his franchise, where typically, if nothing else, he's cared about the brand that he represented in the White Sox and the Bulls. Never mind how awful and messed up and weird politics were with both organizations, the brand always came first, and he always recognized when that was a problem. Now he just seems to embrace it.
And Tommy, if we follow the parallel or the comparison you're drawing and talking Blackhawks, for a time that might have been hopeful, because you could just say, well, then a son or daughter takes over and becomes extremely popular, and the White Sox win 2 or 3 championships. But, you know, the the Rocky War story ended really badly. And he actually was very ugly. He wasn't even a victim. He was very ugly about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we can't even say, well, okay, let's just wait until, you know, the it's inherited.
And, I mean, and carrying that further, like Michael Reinsdorf hasn't exactly done a great job with the Bulls either. So I don't think there's
at least he keeps his mouth shut. But yeah when that's the true. Thing you're saying about an owner. Not so great. All right. That was a wide ranging grievance and a totally legit. I expect all the other grievances to be this wide ranging as well. Going in the line in the batting order that we have in our story on site. That will connect to this live broadcast and then the podcast we make out of this live piece as well. It's going to be Melissa Sage Bollenbach giving us a little bit of a very holiday spirited grievance. Welcome, Melissa, and talk to us a little bit about what you're going to air here.
Well, so in my story, I kind of just basically it was a kind of a lack of joy overall that the White Sox don't bring me anymore. But on the podcast, I want to like specifically talk about something that really irritates the crap out of me. And it goes back to hiring Pedro Grifol and all we're hearing about how he's a baseball man and everybody loves him and he's all about communication. He's all about fundamentals and everything. And I go to spring training and I try to buy into it and I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, they're really playing, you know, practicing all these little things. And then the season starts and I don't know if I've seen a less fundamental baseball team on the field in my life than played the season. It was terrible. They weren't good at anything closely resembling what a fundamental baseball team looks like. And so for me, I don't know. It just really, really made me mad that we're just fed this and that, you know, there's just so much publicity about it. And every interview, Pedro is just going on and talking about it. And then to like have no element of it whatsoever, just really irritated me this season. So there's my specific one for the season.
Let's drill down into Pedro as well, where there's that aspect totally legit, but how about the fact that the guy was hired to be able to relate to players, to manage players, and he has proven to be, I would argue, I mean, at least certainly based on results, I'd argue worse than Tony La Russa at that. He's a guy who's very willing to trash his rookies. Not to say based on performance, maybe it was always unjustified, but veterans always get a pass. The strange thing where he's calling his one player, Luis Robert Jr., out to the point where the press box is aware that he was benched for not hustling. And this is your MVP guy. So on the field is awful. And you might be able to say, well, he doesn't have much to work with. The thing he could definitely control is how he relates to the media, how he relates to his own players, how he chooses to trash guys, to support guys. That seems to be the worst aspect of the job he's done. And that he would seem to be hired because that would be the thing he'd do best.
And then he's given a free pass and like, yeah, we're firing, you know, our front office people yet. Yep, he's going to be back. Like not even evaluating that, giving it the time of day to even think about whether or not to keep him on is just like a huge middle finger to us fans. And yeah, it's pisses me off.
I expect the answer is no, but does anybody recall, I'll let you jump in, Tommy. Mm-hmm. What gets said? There was nothing specific that he said, this is the reason why we're, I mean, even a dumb reason. Yeah. Was there even an actual reason given other than, we believe in him or something?
Not that I can recall. And I watched the press conference and I covered it for the site. And yeah, no, it was just a blanket. Yeah, he's coming back. Like, of course. Like, why wouldn't he come back?
We don't want to bother clearing out the manager's office. It's a lot of work. Just let him stay. Job.
Why would we bother?
I just don't know what he does well to that very question. Like, what does he bring to the table? He doesn't handle pressure well, obviously, in terms of dealing or interacting with players. He doesn't have any sort of strategy To, you know, Jackie's point in the comments, he talked about culture the whole damn season, and it seemed to get worse, not better, where you had reports of guys punching each other in the locker room, and it seemed like every other day there was some random wild story coming out about how the team doesn't like each other. And he acted like everything was fine until Getz took over and said, I'm getting rid of, you know, 80% of the roster. And Grifol was like, oh yeah, I thought the team was a problem. And it's like, where the hell was this energy in March? If you feel that way about the team, you should have enough influence to say something and do something about it, rather than just be like, oh yeah, everything's fine, we're going to work through it, we're going to, you know, bunt and hit and run and do all the small ball things that we're supposed to do because that's what we want to be. Like, he never had any cohesive strategy.
Think about the fact that recall how up in arms we were over Yermin hitting a home run with a 3-0 count and how badly Tony La Russa handled it. Yet we were told to connect it on it, they got along, there's no problem with it. Of course, that's probably BS, but that's what we were told. Let's just believe. A player never left the organization. Even Yermin, you know, again, who was juggling some issues, but even Yermin, nobody left the organization saying they're lazy, there's no accountability. I mean, this is like bad news Bears. I don't even think it's bad news Bears stuff. I think they may have had more discipline than the Chicago White Sox in 2023. So for all the criticism Tony La Russa deservedly earned, I cannot believe I seem to be the backhand supporting Tony La Russa twice already in our little live show here. Ouch. But comparatively, Pedro Grifol had never had a handle, it seemed like, from the start. And he was given the keys, given the authority, and he dropped the keys and no accountability. It's sickening. That's why we have to do, that's why we're doing these grievances. And it's why we're all sad. And we see no light at the end of the tunnel. Well, on that note, Dante Jones, you're batting third. Crystal O'Keefe is hitting cleanup here. Dante, give me a grievance. We'll take a break for podcast sake. And then we're going to get to Crystal, Brett, and, you know, free time, which actually probably won't end until 2024. Sorry, everybody. Okay, Dante, what you got for us?
All right, so my biggest one I wrote about was how irrelevant the White Sox are, because that's what this team is. Irrelevant. They don't matter. I made a joke early in the year when the White Sox were facing the Diamondbacks about how the Diamondbacks was seemingly the most irrelevant team in baseball, because, you know, at the time, at least people talked about the White Sox because they were shit. But now, the Diamondbacks, all these months later, have made the World Series, and the White Sox have done some cleaning house, but not much yet. Like, yeah, the players are gone, and front office, we got some front office people gone, but, like, they haven't done anything that makes me think, oh, they might be competitive next year. And that's hilarious to me, because we had Chris Getz and Pedro and all these people, you know, talking about how next year is not going to be a rebuilding year. And then slowly it becomes, we might have to do a little retooling. We might have to do a little this, that, and a third. And, you know, there's no conversations about relevant free agents being linked to the White Sox. Shohei Ohtani, they told you that they weren't going to go for Shohei Ohtani. Cody Bellinger, that ain't happening. Maybe in 2021, if he was available back then, it could have been a thought. Any big name pictures that might get traded? Nah, not going to be coming to the White Sox, but they might be leaving the White Sox. The biggest person that the White Sox have acquired this year, what, Matt Stassi? Max Stassi, I guess? So,
ouch. That's where we are now.
Yeah, relevance would be a nice start, mm-hmm. And I don't see that happening anytime soon. Also, Tommy, I can tell you what Pedro does good. From what I can tell, from what everybody says, at least he's attractive. That's all he got.
Yeah, there was so much excitement when he was high.
I mean, sure, we can be hot and awful. I guess that's a brand, sure. Right?
But it's all relative. We were coming off Tony La Russa, so he looked like an Adonis compared to what we were dealing with.
Yeah, that's what we all look like, guys, compared to Mr. TLR.
It's like Chris Getz, man, he's doing a pretty stand-up job with some front office hires and some solid moves. He got five players for him. But I'm just like, well, okay, relatively speaking, I guess that's true. But when you're comparing it to just a black hole, yeah, I mean, imagine anything would look good.
Yeah. Also, I love Jackie's just like, is he really though? Is he really hot? Because I don't know. I'm a straight dude. I don't know if he is or isn't. But I mean, I remember the comments when he first got hired and was walking around the city and people were, you know, liking him, loving him. And then the baseball started happening and Pedro was the leader of irrelevancy. And now we can't even get a top four pick in the draft because we just have no type of luck.
Yeah. It's tough to be handsome when you're piloting a 101 loss team and not even smoothly and with no promise and hope for the future. Okay, I promise Crystal's not muted. We will hear from her. For the podcast sake, we're going to take a break. If you're watching this live, and goodness gracious, I hope you are, the numbers appear to be overwhelming. So it's free time for us for like 10 seconds. So, you know, do whatever you need to do. Costume change. I mean, it's all out there for you for the 5 or 10 seconds. We will be back. We promise we have more live grievances to discuss. Hang on.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With us. Hey, welcome back. My name is Brett Valentini. No introductions for the live. You know, we go live. It's just like, well, we're right in the middle. It's like live news event happening. It's like a house blowing up. Well, the White Sox 2023 is sort of like a house blowing up, right? Well, we were doing spot news, so no real introductions. Let me try to remedy that. This will become Sox Populi podcast number 166. Right now we're live. I think this is our sixth live event, you know, no draft to cover, no whatnot. So why not go live for grievances? And with me on this grievances podcast, it's our third, and it should technically be the lengthiest. Maybe we are actually having just to edit for time because we could actually go on forever with these grievances. Is Dante Jones, who you just heard from before the break, Father Sox of us himself, gave us all a scare, sweeping in right as we went to air. Oh my God, that was a classic move. Tommy Barbie, Melissa Sage Bullenbach in front of the Christmas tree, grieving and grieving heartily as a fan just shy of my tenure as a White Sox fan. So we've got the tree rings to prove how much pain this team has inflicted on us. And who we'll hear from now in terms of grievances, it's Crystal O'Keefe. I know one of her grievances she probably will not mention is just simply White Sox not being smart enough to hire her for any number of jobs, including simply opening bottles to prevent injury. But Crystal, take it away. Grieve for us.
So my biggest grievance this year was the whole Catsell Fixum terrible, terrible pitching that was displayed all year long. You know, when you're getting rid of Lucas and you're getting rid of Lance and you have Dylan Cease is your only hope in pitching, you're doing something wrong, especially when we all saw the Dylan Cease regression coming. I mean, he was almost Cy Young last year, so we knew it wasn't going to be a good year for him. I mean, again, employing an abuser was terrible. There was no bullpen to be seen. They've like killed all of their pitching. Again, they really just shit the bed with Michael Kopech, the whole getting him back to the starter role. It was just embarrassing to watch when Catslav is broken. Like, why is he still around? Because he has done nothing but be Lucas Giolito's friend and old coach. That was it. He didn't prove anything at all this season. He really didn't prove much last season either. And I don't know what's going on. I mean, they're professionals, and I don't even know. They just, Ethan Katz makes me really angry at this point.
It's an iPad, but he just walks around with him at all times.
And yes, iPad and like 10 of his shoes on. Like, that's all he does. And he's back. I just don't understand what was going on, why he is still there to this day, why he hasn't been fired. Because if you're trading half of your pitching off to teams that then like send them to completely opposite teams, you're doing something wrong. And they don't acquire any decent pitchers because, again, there is nothing in the farm system right now. Jackie, Ethan Katz is hot, though. But he can be pretty all he wants, but he's terrible. Terrible person. That was really incoherent, but I was really mad at Ethan Katz all season.
I think it's fair to say.
I just appreciate that you called him out, because we need more people to call him out. I feel like he's been flying under the radar for a while now.
Yes, and he's bad. And he's attractive. People give attractive people a pass.
I don't.
Jackie's so honest. Crystal doesn't care. She's like, I don't care if you're hot. You suck.
Like, I don't understand what he was doing, because everyone was so bad this year.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, freak accidents and things like that happen. We didn't have Garrett Crochet. We didn't have Liam Hendricks kind of backing this team up. But again, there was not a single pitcher this year that I could say had a successful season and a good ERA at the end of the day.
Well, you could argue too, Crystal. One, unfortunately, is the guy who shouldn't have been on the team in the first place. Clearly, he did way better than anyone would have thought he could have done. And even how his peripherals were looking early in the season, it was like, okay, this is a house of cards. It's going to collapse. And it didn't, which just made the season even more painful. And then the rookie Gregory Santos, I think whether that had anything to do with Katz, okay, you could point to those two guys, but that still leaves like 20 other pitchers, who didn't get it done. And, Tommy backs it. I think it's fair to say, I mean, not just this season, he's been a mixed bag. And I know that's what coaches generally are. I mean, if anybody is that great a success, I don't know, they'd be managing or they'd be owning a team, you know, whatever. They'd have a lifetime contract like Don Cooper, like the interesting to look at Don Cooper. And, Carlos Rodon, of course, but then there's been a lot of, what more can you say? But the guy he was sort of hired to like mentor and then spread the magic to the rest of the staff, you know, pitched by and large poorly under his tutelage. I know there's a little rally in 2023, but certainly 2022 was...
On three teams. and even the third team was like, yeah, nah, just go.
As much as I love Lucas, he was not good.
No.
And Ethan Katz has not been good at his job since he got here. Like, I'm not crediting him with getting Dylan Cease to be good, because we saw that Dylan Cease had the tools. I'm not going to give him credit for anything, because lately he's been doing nothing for us at all. He's just here because he's pretty and he has friends.
I'll certainly defend him more than that. He does have success, and I don't think it's, Dylan Cease, got a little more efficient. It was a Cy Young pitcher just by chance. And certainly the Rodon turnaround, I will connect directly to Katz. We have actually, we have actual evidence of that. But that said, I mean, I'll jump on the train and say, come on, this guy needs to show us more. Certainly, there should have been more successes, even in this bleak 101 loss season, than what we saw. There should have been more than just a rookie who became like, I guess, the closer in training, to get excited about. Certainly,
I mean, it's bad when Touki Toussaint is one of your best pitchers that you watch his games and you're like, you know what? I can sort of at least rely on him. I can rely on Touki Toussaint, who was washed before he got here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think the other thing too is that as a major league pitching coach, like, you have to continue to adjust whatever it is that's working with those pitchers. And that's where I get frustrated, is that, like, yes, Cease was remarkable that year, but you know, hitters are going to start adjusting to it based on the tape, based on his tendencies, what he's throwing, what he's doing. And I never saw cats or anyone internally talk about, here's what's happening to try to combat that. And yeah, it was the same thing with Giolito before he got traded, where it was just like, we know his mechanics aren't quite right, but we're trying to fix them. But same time, his velocity was down, which has been a constant theme with all of the pitchers in the White Sox organization. And if you're going to have down velocity, you have to have movement or control or something else to help offset that velocity going down at the rate that it was going. And none of those guys had it. So they're just throwing these flat pitches. And that's why they've been giving up so many home runs. And I know he knows that because he has the iPad in front of him at all times, but it never seemed like he knew what the next step was.
I don't know that I would trust him to coach high school baseball, like a pitching coach for high school.
I was going to say, the thing is, like, he might have the iPad in front of him all the time, but we see that Javier Baez has the iPad in front of him all the time, and he doesn't become a better hitter.
He's just looking at his highlights. He's just looking at his four highlights.
Well, he's trying to see how far out of the strike zone he needs to swing the next time to make contact. Yeah,
Jackie in the comments said exactly what I was going to say. She just beat me to it. I was going to say, what is he watching on the iPad? Is it Bluey? She beat me to it, but, like, we don't know what he's watching on there. He could be watching anything. He could be watching dog videos.
And there was an interview with the abuser, you know, so trying to even think, oh, can we give Katz credit for what he did this year? There was an interview with Redacted, and he kind of said it quickly, but he was talking about his people. Like his people, so not even cats. It was like his own people that he had helping him make his comeback. Like, so even he couldn't help Redacted, and he had to have his own people help him.
Since we're talking about Redacted, I'd rather Redacted and Redacted's people stay over there and not get anywhere near the rest of the team, because this team is already toxic enough. I don't want to just absolutely hate every single thing about them instead of 60% of things about them.
Yeah. Well, I'm with Crystal. Yeah. There are no success stories at all that we can point to about Ethan Katz. And let's face it. I don't know if of course you remember, you're covering this team. You pay attention. You're paying closer attention than I am. I mean, even in the La Russa era, remember the controversy where Lucas was like gassed and he wasn't getting pulled from the game and he gave up the lead, and it was a big controversy because like La Russa didn't pull him and he was working too hard. And from the start, I thought, well, then where is the pitching coach who's like his mentor buddy? He's in the dugout. He's not able to say either elbow Tony or just run out there and say, okay, let's slow this thing down. Lucas, you all right? You're going to die. What's going on? The fact that Lucas had to throw, like, I don't know, somebody under the bus. And yet, you know, like his buddy is the guy who's there to look out for him. I mean, and that was early in the Cats' tenure. So,
every Giolito start, though, at that point. Because at first it was like, oh, he's bad on mornings. That's why he got just tormented on Patriots Day. He's not a morning person. I'm like, well, how do you explain 9 p.m. games then? Like, he's bad here, he's bad in the morning, he's bad at noon. There's an issue here.
But on games between 5 and 8. On games between 5 and 8.
Yeah, he's aces. All right, well, I'll grieve now. And it, I think, touches on a little bit of what Father Soxivus started off here. So we went from some real specifics, all of us training pitchforks, surprisingly, at Ethan Katz, to just a broader take, which can either lead to more discussion, or you can all just pat me on the head and say, okay, old fella, let's talk about something else. But to me, it's not something that I haven't talked about probably in many podcasts stretching back for some time, but it really is a culture issue to me. It's the notion that it's impossible to be proud of this team. It's not hard to be. It's impossible at this point to be proud of the team. And it really comes down to the fact that they've gone out of their way to, you know, as I think Tommy explained up top, to alienate, to drive fans who have been fans longer than I have, or much younger than, you know, I am, away from the team. Now they are really a butt of a joke in a way that, you know, you can make an argument that that's, you know, always been the case. And we can like try to slide into like some kind of lovable loser thing. That's not what the White Sox were about. They're a competitive team that did more good overall, including off the field, even when in times where on the field was a little rough. Those downturns didn't seem to be too sustained. There weren't a lot of highlights, but there was a general sense of competitiveness, pride, history that really seems to be getting, I don't know, actively scrubbed at this point. I mean, when the team's so bad, you know, which has been the balance of this century, and certainly in the Han era, the Han now what we call, I guess, Han plus era, it just leaves you with a feeling that, I mean, really makes you seriously reconsider your fandom. And I hate saying that. Working on, writing for, helping run a site dedicated to this one team, not just baseball, this one team. But you got to be honest and say, you know, look, take a hard look in the mirror and realize if I wasn't doing this, I would not, in all likelihood, not even be a White Sox fan. You can't take it out of me. It is in the blood. But in terms of dormancy, in terms of just letting it lie and maybe die, yeah, probably. This team on several levels, including on the field, which is really ultimately, I suppose, what is the most important thing, not only seems to not care, not execute, making things worse, I keep saying, is the bottom, have we reached the bottom? I am in no way convinced we've even reached the bottom in terms of the embarrassment on and off the field. On the field, it's going to be brutal. Nothing we've seen so far would cause me to feel like this isn't going to be a record-breaking 107 losses. I think Crystal just passed me last podcast and she's the 117 or whatever it is. So, you know, I might not even be the low, high person in terms of losses for the season. Nothing's going to change that's going to make us feel too much more encouraged. And you can say, well, they can't be as bad. Well, all right, let's all just take a breath and watch them be as bad or worse. But on the field's only part of it. Off the field has just been... It's this cringe on a, I don't know, every other week, every other day, it seems like sometimes basis that is a new wrinkle to all of this that, I don't know, it just makes me sad. It makes me question, I mean, honestly, it makes me question what I'm doing here. And if not for, you know, all of you wonderful people and our massive viewing and listening audience, you know, what would the point be? I mean, it'd be very easy hanging up. So, you know, that's rambling and vague. I know it's at the heart of a lot of what maybe all of us are feeling, you know, on this podcast and otherwise. But, you know, it's just this feeling of sad and almost like defeat. The White Sox, they have broken me as a fan. And, you know, maybe I should be stronger than that. But, you know, I'll admit I'm not. And, you know, frankly, I don't care enough about the White Sox to just like hang on for dear life to the coattails of, you know, I don't know, Jerry Reinsdorf or... you know, the ghost of Don Cooper. So that's my broad grievance. And, you know, this can be, you know, open discussion time. Or if you want to take another run at other things that you just barely cut as your grievance, you know, let them out now, because this is the grievance podcast and we're just barely a half hour in.
Oh, I can go on for days and days with this team. First thing first, you said something about being lovable losers. Fuck that. Mm-hmm. Ain't no lovable losers. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. Like, I might not hate mm-hmm. the Cubs, but there's no such thing about mm-hmm. lovable being losers. Like, no, being losers means you're losers. You shouldn't love losers because they're fun and all that bullshit. Like, it's been whenever you call a team a fun team. If you call a team a fun team, they're probably going to suck. Second of all, as Jackie said, and me and Jackie were both there for it.
Do it, Dante. Come
we
on.
We almost got shot. There was a shooting at the stadium. We didn't even get to see Vanilla Ice.
Yep.
Like, this team doesn't even know how to do security well enough. And trust me, they ain't the only team in baseball, because I've been to a few stadiums now. Security is a joke across stadiums. And, like, I'll never be the pro police person because, I mean, look at me. But, Jesus Christ, protect your fan base. You said, you know, the off the field ain't too good. You can barely get off the field with how close things are happening to them.
Yeah.
Like, this team is unwatchable on the field. I've reached the point where if I wasn't covering them or they weren't playing a team with players that I liked, I wasn't watching White Sox games. Like, this team is irrelevant, and like there's good irrelevant teams. There are good irrelevant teams. We call them the Milwaukee Brewers, a team that, or you know, the Cardinals most of the time. Teams that are going to be good, but they probably won't end up, you know, doing anything major. Hell, the Diamondbacks were one of those teams that were irrelevant until they went on a run and became relevant.
Yeah. And Dante, let me let the ghost of Jackie Kressel cut in here. I mean, let's not overlook what is a pretty significant point in the Vanilla Ice game. I mean, I remember you and Jackie both were like, gee, hey, there was no kind of, well, this sucks. There's no concert.
Yeah.
There was a shooting at the park and they continued the game.
We didn't know what happened until we left out the park. Like, at what point, like, I went back to the stadium since because honestly, I've been around enough shootings that, like, shootings don't scare me as much as some other people, which not a positive thing. But the thing is, at the end of the day, if I hear that there's a shooting at the stadium, this big stadium that's supposedly protected by police officers and security guards who are about as useful as they proved to be that night, then yeah, I'm going to be upset that I could have been put in harm's way because some idiot decided to bring a gun in on some police officer. We don't even know. As Tommy said, we don't have any more additional information. We don't know what happened.
Story's done.
It's whatever happened. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Like, and honestly, I've reached the point of being like, I still wish I got the Vanilla Ice and Tone Loc concert at least.
They valued Vanilla Ice's life way more than any fan.
Well, no, fans,
you get shot. Who cares? But we got
Vanilla Ice even tweeted about afterwards. I think. Yeah. Like, and like, I was born in 1996. I went to a baseball game to see Vanilla Ice more than I went to see the 2023 White Sox. Does that not show?
That's really a whole other podcast, Dante. But
and
you know,
that's
again,
where
respect.
I think underscores the whole thing is
that, yeah, like I think that shows just how horrible of a franchise this team has become. Because as Brett said, in the past it wasn't like this. I can remember better times, and my memories don't go as far back as anybody else on this pod. But like I can remember the good times of at least the White Sox are watchable. Chris Sale was my favorite player in baseball. Jose Abreu was also my favorite player in baseball, and Tim Anderson is my favorite player ever. And there was fun times, at least. Like, yeah, they weren't good, but they was a irrelevant team that at least could provide some type of value from the entertainment standpoint and from being one of the more highly regarded franchises in terms of how they, like, just do things off the field. And that just has seemingly died. And it's sad to see about my one of my favorite teams. Probably my favorite sports team until this year. And also, Brooks Boy could go fuck himself about the Jason Benetti thing. Because at the end of the day, Jason Benetti is one of the best in the game. And to disrespect somebody like that, him and Jerry, to disrespect somebody like that is one of those things that makes me say, I'm not a White Sox fan as much as I am a dude that writes about the White Sox and watches their games because I literally live about 5 miles away from the stadium.
Well, while we're still on Vanilla Ice, let's just point out, it might be a small nitpick, but the White Sox cannot, the security, whatever, cannot handle a crowd of more than 5,000 without taking 45 minutes to get into the ballpark. So on one end or the other, either keep you very safe because of the hassle to get in, or just, you know, let people in maybe a little more quickly and not check every bag that's bigger than a wallet, because it should be either or, shouldn't it? If not both, I would think both, but at least either or. And the White Sox aren't doing either, because I don't think there's any other team this year we could talk about like bullets in the park, concerts being canceled, nobody knows anything.
Vanilla Ice, who like lived through the 90s and really kind of saw a lot of stuff go down, said, no, screw this. I'm not going out in Chicago to play this White Sox game. That's sad when Vanilla Ice is like, no, I'm good. Yeah. I don't need the money that bad. Keep it.
Yeah. Sorry, Dante. Sorry, Jackie. No,
knowing the White Sox, they still paid them too because they'd like to pay you things.
Oh, you know they did.
Those things. Yeah. Plus, you know, you pay up front.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Vanilla Ice is coming to the Chicago White Sox ballpark unless – the suitcase has already been delivered. Well, Benetti's was thrown out there, but I mean, other grievances, you know, that I know there are more.
I just don't like that like I wrote in my piece, like through all my decades of being a fan, like I never lost like hope and like that things could get better. And right now I don't like, I'm not going to give up on my fandom because I just can't do that. But like, I also don't feel really hopeful that it's going to change and that things are going to get better. And that's really depressing to me because when you feel hopeless about something, like there's only one way to go and it, yeah. then it's down. And so that to me has been one of the, I think, biggest disappointments of this season of White Sox fandom of life in this post World Series era is that there hasn't been a whole lot to be hopeful for, except for that very small, you don't even call it a window, like the cracked door that was 2021. And then how badly that all went down and that so many people that are still involved in that are still around. And so that makes me sad.
Melissa, people attend games with bags over their heads for far, 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 far less than what we've withstood. What fan base is supposed to really stare into the void? We can all play this thing like the liberal, oh, for God's sake. That was like, that's still probably, frankly, Cub fan identity. You know, it's just goofy, ridiculous, right? And there are other fan bases like that. Oh yeah, we just can't win. White Sox have forced us all to stare into the void. What team, not just, because that's not just a 101 loss season. Those do happen and basically every team goes through them. The fact that we all have to stare in the mirror and say, what are we doing? And whatever the answer is, it's not going to be like, 100% like, you know, huzzah, you know, for the White Sox. The idea that we have to really contemplate our fandom, what ownership, what team does it? This isn't just whoops, you know, a couple bad breaks and the guy didn't slide or, you know, whatever. Some person got injured, couldn't come back and play. This is serious, serious, ugly stuff. And it's layered at this point. It's not just one. I mean, we could stare into the void over what, half of what's happened, probably less than that. And it just keeps going, which is what, again, makes me fear, connecting what Melissa just said, that, you know, the hopelessness, the idea that we still haven't maybe hit bottom with this team. And that's like daunting and frightening.
We haven't, and it's layered. But I mean, the reason why my grievances just ended up pointing towards Jerry Reinsdorf is because he is responsible for all of this stuff that happened. And, you know, it's one thing for a team to be bad because, you know, that happens. I have never agreed with Rick Hahn on how to build a roster. That doesn't surprise me. But you look at the attendance numbers between last year and this year, and the White Sox had the biggest drop-off for any team not named the Oakland A's, which they have that makes sense why that's happening there. So you're talking about a product, and I'm thinking about this as an owner. You're talking about a product that isn't generating revenue, isn't generating interest, doesn't really have all of the big market ambitions and, you know, lifestyle that you would generally associate with a city like Chicago. And I thought that was problematic enough, but now you're actively saying, oh yeah, but Nashville, I can make this happen. Like that to me, that's where I really changed my attitude strictly towards Jerry Reinsdorf, because it's bad enough to run this franchise into the ground because you're too loyal to the people that are close to you and you listen to the wrong voices that are in the room with you. It's a whole different thing entirely to try to do a 1989 all over again and be like, oh yeah, I'm totally going to move this team to Nashville, wink wink. Like that's not the game to even play anymore. There are 10 other teams that if they were to move would easily be in front of line before the Chicago White Sox, let alone Nashville's next in line for an expansion team. So it's probably not going to happen anyway, but he keeps trying to make this a story to prove a point, to try to throw some political weight around when he doesn't have any. And that is where I'm just like, this guy is so tone deaf to what is really available to him politically and how much power he really holds.
Tommy, he just wants to give other cities plenty of time to prepare a package that's far more generous than what he's always already getting from
already.
That's going to take time. I mean, that's a lot of stuff. So, yeah, it's weird. I mean, you even give, I mean, not that I'm going to give someone who demolishes Comiskey Park a pass ever, but okay, he's coming off a division championship, A3, a few years later. I mean, not like anybody thought Comiskey Park wasn't old, and I'm sure you doctor enough reports, you can say, oh, it's going to collapse on people. We can't possibly keep playing baseball in it, even though there's an even a nastier Pistroff Park just 5 miles to the north that keeps on going, even though concrete is falling nearly on top of people. But now you're playing the same game a second time around. It is so hollow.
It's so with the hollow. Same tactics.
Same tactics. That's why they got to prepare their packages, because, you know, I mean, what other city's going to pay for, like buy tickets from you?
Yeah. You know? I was just going to say, it's kind of funny to me. Like, I was thinking about as Tommy was talking. Yeah, the White Sox kind of like, you know, they call themselves the Southsiders. We've always called them the Southsiders. It feels more like they call the Southsiders because they're on the south side of a city. Not because they care about the south side of the city. Like, to them, the south side stops, like, at 55th Street at the furthest south. Like, it reminds me of one of the TV shows, Shooting Care, that, like, claimed to be this, this, and this about Chicago, the south side of the hood, and they didn't go past 63rd. And it's like, Jerry, that's the thing. Jerry doesn't care about the city. He just owns two teams that play in the city. And also, what happened to what happened to Sox Fest? Like, that we don't even have have questions of if it's happening or an announcement that's been canceled. Like, which means more likely like a bad video game. It just ain't happening.
Yeah, the default now is there is none, and then they're gonna come out and say, we're having one, you know, in 2045.
And like it'll happen in 2025, and by then they'll burn all of the goodwill. I mean, what goodwill, but still. They'll burn the little bit left, the last little embers.
I mean, Dante, apologies to Ryan, but I mean, Reinsdorf cares so much about the South Side that their City Connect jerseys are printed South Side. Well, they're printed Smith Side, and then they're printed South Side. So, just a nitpick. Sorry, Ryan. But yeah, no, I think there's at this point under the Reinsdorf ownership, they're South Side by, by practicality, by convenience, by accident, and not really in spirit, which is a shame. Speaking of someone from the very, 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 very far south side at this point.
Yeah, like, I'm an Inglewood kid, and I ain't never heard of anything happening with the White Sox in Inglewood. I've heard the Bulls and Bears. Like, I've seen the Bulls and Bears do things over here. The only person, it's funny, one of the only people that you'll ever see on the south side of Chicago representing the White Sox is Tim Anderson. And I'm pretty sure that he was disliked for that too.
Because people, he was.
He's with the wrong crowd. Sure. He's doing this. He's doing that. Meanwhile, we have Redacted being, Redacted actually being a horrible human being.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of fans I saw turn on Tim and Yoan and Aloy and so many players. They turned on Luis Robert before he turned into MVP level player again. Like, the fickleness of these fans, it's hilarious to me. Fickleness of the fans and the lack of protection for players. Like we've talked about throughout this entire thing, the fact that the White Sox just, if it's time to throw someone under a bus, they're going to throw you under it, go over you at least four times, maybe three times to represent the rings, and make sure you're dead.
Didn't finish him off. Throw it in reverse.
In a few years, if the unthinkable happens and a certain center fielder isn't in Chicago, just know we warned you.
Yeah, but we'll have Colson Montgomery, Dante. It'll all be fine.
And don't worry, if a certain shortstop isn't in Chicago in about 7 years, we warned you.
Yeah. Well, we've sort of reached the cannibalism state of the grievances, where now we're turning on our own. But listen, hey, Southside Sox is not afraid to call out our fellow fans for crying out loud. You know, stand up and be counted. Have a backbone. Call out ownership. But it is, wait, we try to. Yes, Tommy.
No, I was just going to say, it is interesting, Dante, because Tim Anderson was the only player that I can remember in recent history that actively moved to Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, I know there are players that have had homes here, but he's the only one that actively moved to Chicago. And, you know, I know the White Sox have their ace program that does very well, but I still find it fascinating that in all of their draft picks, they have never picked anybody out of that Amateur City Elite program.
Yeah, and it's also funny because, like, Ed Howard should have been a White Sox draft.
That's pick. Who I'm thinking of in particular. Yeah,
that was a slam dunk, and they let the Cubs pick him up. Like, what are we doing here? And I almost started my part of my grievances with, why the fuck are we even writing grievances about the White Sox? They don't matter. In the grand scheme of baseball things, they do not matter right now, which I hate saying, but it's true. Prove me wrong, Jerry and crew.
Yeah, and it's come up, Dante, where it's like, you know, I'm sure I've got plenty of cracks in on the Cubs. I think a couple of you have maybe in this podcast as well. Let's face it, their faces are just made for it. But, you know, how you can't rant too much. I think as outlined, I mean, the minute there's pushback, okay, you got to stand out. In the past, not necessarily. You can continue having that fight and debate. And that goes for probably any other fan base out there. At this point, we pretty much have to stand down, and that's not a great position to be in. I mean, you want to be able to flex a little bit. You want to be able to point to something you feel good about. And man, you know, the center fielder aside, and even that's tenuous because, you know, you got 120 games, 130 games last year. Come on, what's the odds in 2024? So, I mean, like you just said, Dante, prove us wrong. Getz, win executive year. I'm rooting for you. I don't know anything happening, but I mean, we do want good things. It's just at this point, what are the odds?
We have so many seats at the tables, though.
And we're open for business. So we are seats at the
table. I can't wait to
business. So
I can't wait for whatever Getz's phrase ends up being, because I know it's going to be something equally awful.
Mm-hmm. Well, some seat at the table. We almost had Bryce Harper. Don't worry. Almost. Yeah. We were this close. Someone outbid us by a dollar.
We had his, you know, rafters up in the United Center.
And a correction, I don't mean to call him that, a correction to what Crystal said, we have plenty of seats at the table in Atlanta, it seems very clear. Anywhere else, I'm not quite sure. Getz, or as Jackie, again, the ghost of Jackie Crystal points out, Getzy just lingering at the dumpster outside the front offices at Atlanta. Anybody gets thrown in, say, hey, you want to come work for the White Sox? I'm guessing there are a few others who said, no, not really. Actually, no, not really. Max Stassi's like, well, I didn't play last year, so yeah, okay. Yeah,
why I
not?
Mean, it's like they're perpetually stuck at the children's table every.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. I mean, that children's table's come up, I think, probably every year we've mentioned being at the table. And sure, I mean, to be honest, Getzy looks like he might actually, you know, that might actually be his spot at the table. It seems perhaps right, but you know, Han has well earned that spot at the children's table. And yeah, of course, Getzy is going to assume that seat. It's not even cold yet.
They haven't even touched the ground. They're just flailing around at the kids' table.
Quit kicking me, Getzy.
Finish the play. With him is the question.
What's that?
Who's at the table with him? Because he's not the only kid GM.
The Pirates, whoever the Pirates GM is right now.
Like the Pirates, the A's don't even count really.
A's aren't even at a table.
Yeah, like the A's are currently moving to find the table right now. My actual question is, you know, child seat at the table. How long does it take until Getzy does a recon, like you said, like has a quote, not just has a quote, but how long until he gets the confidence to be like, you know, you guys ain't gonna go anywhere though. We saw that happen with the, I want to say Cincinnati ownership group this year.
Oh yeah. Like, where are you gonna go?
Yeah, the way you're gonna go.
Yeah.
Because that's what it feels like, the point we've reached with the White Sox. And the only reason they're getting worse with the Reds this year was because they started doing halfway decent.
I think that slip's still coming, Dante. I mean, I think it's been unspoken. It's been between the lines now. It seems like for the bulk of the rebuild. I won't even say the whole rebuild, but it's been, I'd say it's been years that that's been pretty much the unwritten, the invisible ink mission statement of White Sox. But the slip, it's only a matter of time, especially if Jerry keeps parading himself out. That slip's coming because
it is,
you know, and what they don't say or what they actually do say, that message is pretty much out there.
Yeah, they're not.
You're going to go to the Cubs? Yeah, come on.
They're not shy about it. So it's just amazing.
No.
I always think about the Logan Roy quote from Succession when I think about the White Sox, where he says, "I love you, but you are not serious people." That sums up all of my feelings on this team.
Yeah.
It's not a serious franchise.
No.
I mean, when you look at the number of playoff appearances, like forget even World Series appearances and titles, just like number of playoff appearances in the last 10, 20 years compared to every other franchise in baseball, it's embarrassing. It really is.
Yeah, when you're looking up at the Cubs, what else do I need? I don't need to finish that statement. That's embarrassing. Yeah. Oh, but our all-time, you know, record might be better than this, that, or the other team. Well, and that is something. But yeah, come on, finish the job. And you can say, well, in 2006 they would have been in the playoffs. In 2000, you know, whatever. That's great, but they weren't. So sorry. There was a time when there were two playoff teams. So okay, and the Sox finished second plenty of times. They could never get out of the shadow of the Yankees. Okay, fine. They make it. They didn't make it. When they got there, they didn't win it. So. Historical grievances. Yeah, it's the panoply of grievances here. On the area of grievances, I guess this is time to transition. Oh my God, let's see if I can pull off the one production move that I have. Thank you, Tommy, for flashing a few comments during the course of things, but we still do have Soxivists to come. It, I guess, won't be as grim as the grievances. Oh, I can't promise that as the year.
No, it will be.
Okay, all right.
Battle Royale right now.
Disabuse yourself of the notion it's going to get any sunnier. It's just going to get, as the days get shorter and as a seasonal affective disorder kicks in on everyone, it is only going to get uglier as a week from today, live or otherwise, who knows? We'll see. We're going to do feats of strength. And that is, I think, somehow, well, Tommy, tell us what that's going to be.
So clearly, Getz hates this team, so we all know that pretty much anyone that's left is going to be sold for scraps, baseballs, players to be named later, cash considerations. Take your pick. They will all be going. So my question, the challenge of the feats of strength, is who survives this magical Getzian purge that we're currently witnessing? Because Dylan Cease supposedly still has a market that seems to be dwindling, but that's a whole nother conversation and podcast. There's got to be somebody left. Who's it going to be? Or is it going to be Mike Soroka, that's like our opening day starter, and Luis Robert isn't even here anymore because he got traded to the Blue Jays because they're so disheveled from losing out on Otani.
Yeah. We may have to dig into the system. I mean, that's might. Fair game because there's like what, three guys you can maybe mention.
Is it just Oscar Colas who's still like inappropriately hitting on people on Instagram and
fed by redacted. Oh Lord, God. Oh, all right. Let's not ever mention the brackets, the bracketed one again on podcasts if we can. And then, you double your money. That subscription price you're paying, which I believe, let's see, let me check. Yes, it's zero. You get to double your money with a December 22nd podcast right before Christmas, a special present for you under the tree. And that is going to be the Soxivist Miracles. We've done it in the past and we'll do it again this year. Hey, Father Soxivist, lay that on us. What's that going to be?
There has to be a silver lining in all of this. Whether it's a Vanilla Ice concert that you don't get to see.
Actually plays.
It's Liam making his way to the mound, only to be injured for the rest of eternity. There's going to be that moment that makes you feel good. What is it going to be this upcoming year?
It's clearly Andrew Benintendi hitting 6 home runs.
Oh my God, yes. Thrilling.
Ooh.
Thrilling. 1.8 WAR this year. Yeah, okay, yeah. Start focusing on it now because Lord knows that is going to be a really challenging one to put down. You may want to just like scratch notes right after this podcast. And that goes for any of you listening, reading, whatever. We're going to need suggestions because Lord knows how many miracles there could possibly be coming out of the 2024 Chicago White Sox, who are destined to lose somewhere, I don't know, as much as 117, according to one of us here, and oh, maybe just as few as, like, I don't know, 92, according to some of us here. God,
that could be the miracle.
Is that not sick? We've chuckled about it on a podcast in the past, and that is, we're talking about an improvement of the season being just like 90 losses. But that's where we're at. When you have 101, that's 11 game. What are we doing? And I'm sorry. I have to ask all of you watching, listening, reading. What are we doing? Oh, please let us know. Give me some direction so that I can fire up the podcast machine in a week and actually do this again as we contemplate feats of strength. I guess on behalf of Crystal O'Keefe, donning some excellent socks wear and a brand new fresh happening sleeve. Melissa Sage Bolenbach, who I do not think has graced us with a Freddy cameo, and for that matter, no Willow cameo, I don't think either. So I do not know what's going on. The respect for the holidays and Soxivus is extraordinary, but rocking the super, super cool, I don't know, what is that, Sox warm-up jacket, circa 80s. Digging it. And Christmas tree. Dante Jones channeling pulp, a merry Pulp Fiction, a happy Pulp Fiction to all of you out there. And I'm going to just say it because I have to. You're expecting me to. Father Sox of himself, rocking in spirit, if not literally, his Chet Lemon jersey. God bless you for that. That's my Christmas present right there. And then there's me. Well, on behalf of all of my friends here on the panel, and of course, let's not forget the ghost of Jackie Crestel. Maybe she will join us. Maybe she will materialize in some sort of Christmas carol for one of these final two podcasts. Thank you for all of your input, Jackie. You get full credit for having attended this class. You have earned your grade this time around, even though you have not appeared on the podcast with us. Best of Jackie.
Miss your face.
Please. On behalf of Jackie and Chico as well. Okay, well, that's it for our live broadcast. We have crossed an hour. Somehow, I do not know how we kept it so short to be just a little bit more than an hour and change. I guess it's just our brevity or just sheer fatigue about this team called the Chicago White Sox. I'm Brett Ballantini hosting these podcasts. We'll be back with Sox Pop 167 in a week. We are going to be talking about feats of strength. Choose your fighter. And let's see how they do at the kids' table this time around, pushing Getzy out of his high chair. Okay, we'll be back in a week. Thanks, everybody, for watching, participating. Crystal, Melissa, Dante, and Tommy for appearing, as well as the ghost of Jackie Crestel. We will be back sometime soon. Yes, it'll be in a week, live or otherwise. We'll be back continuing the celebration of the Sox of a season. Thanks, all, and catch you in a week. Oh.